The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. My guest today is the executive editor of Federal News Radio, Jason Miller. And our topic for discussion today is how to get on the radar, basically how to get PR. Jason, thanks for joining me.
Well, Mark, it's been a while. I'd like to thank you for having me back on the program.
Well, yeah, just the bribes help, but...
Small bills, yes, of course, yes.
Small bills and promise to stay out of your way.
I prefer candy, so well, I'll just let you know.
Well, yeah, that's good to know, because Costco has these massive bags, but I'll remember that, because we're coming up on Halloween. For those of you who don't know, Jason's been covering the business of Washington for almost 20 years, 3 years at Washington Business Information, which was one of the premier newsletter outlets in the 80s when newsletters were, you know, absolutely cool. I mean, you know, these things came out weekly or biweekly and you spent anywhere from $500 to $2,500 a year to get them. But they were very specifically focused, very niche. For 7 years after that, he was the news editor at Government Computer News. And for the last 8 years, he's been the executive editor here at Federal News Radio. So he knows a lot about what I want you to know about, which is basically how to get on the radar, how to get publicity. So let me start off with something simple. What percentage of people contacting you, pitching you, have bad pitches?
Wow. That's a good question to start. The majority. It's hard to say if it's 80% or 90%.
But it's a lot.
It's a lot. And the reason why they're bad pitches is because they're always after the fact. Hey, Jason, I just saw you write this story. Don't you want to talk to our expert on this story? And the answer 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100 is no, I'm done with that story. I'm on to my next story.
You're not going to do another one tomorrow?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you pay attention, I guess, you know, to what we do as Federal News Radio and what most organizations do, not just Federal News Radio, but a lot of our competition, who I won't mention.
No, we won't talk about them. But I mean, any news organization.
Once you're done with that story, the next follow-up may not be for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. It's very rare that it's one day after the other. I mean, it's got to be a really big story. OPM hack is one example where you're going to have multiple stories day after day after day, or something like a new memo from OMB that affects everybody in terms of like a budget, a sequestration, a shutdown type thing. But when you're talking about a cybersecurity story, like, hey, DHS is rolling out the Einstein program to more agencies, and then someone says, well, do you want us to tell you why Einstein doesn't work? No, I'm done with that story because I'm moving on to the next thing. So that's where the pitches go wrong most of the time in my eyes.
I'm not media. I don't consider myself media. I do have a show once a week. I also write for the trade publications here in Washington, D.C., and occasionally, you know, a broader-based marketing publication. But I don't consider myself media, but I still get pitches. And sometimes they start out like this. Hey, Mark, do you still do that show on Fed Radio? You were connected on LinkedIn. It's right there on my profile. I've been here for what? I was here a year before you, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't you think it's kind of embarrassing, especially that one was from a PR firm?
Part of the challenge with anything is understanding your audience. So what does Mark Amtower do? What does Mark Amtower focus on? And I think so many times the research is very rudimentary. It's, I'll go to the website, I'll see his last two shows, and I'll send him this pitch because I think it fits. Or you're on some kind of list. Hey, Mark Amtower is on a list that covers the business of government. I'll send him a pitch. And there's no creation of this. What does Jason or Mark or whomever really do? And then how do I fit into that? And what I always tell people is you know, several different things. I always say, create the relationship. But that doesn't mean go have coffee with me because I'm busy, you're busy, and meeting with your CEO, your head of federal, is a waste of both of our times. Help me get ahead of the thing, whatever the news is. Hey, Jason, we're hearing tomorrow, the next day, 3 days from now, this is going to happen. If you're looking for a source when this happens, call me. Let me give you a real-life example. It's happening now. So the Office of Management Budget is going to release the updated FISMA, Federal Information Security Management Act guidance, new metrics, and a new strategy of sorts for the next steps of the cyber sprint, the what they're calling now the cyber marathon. And
good, because it's not a sprint.
It's not a sprint anymore. And what will invariably happen is somebody, well, I'll write the story once those come out, and somebody will ask me, hey, do you want to talk to our smart guy or smart woman about this? Instead, what you should tell me is, and it's not just me, but it's whomever in the media world, you should say, we know this is coming tomorrow. If you're looking for a source, here's our great smart person. I am more likely to go, yeah, let's set something up today for tomorrow. Or, hey, if you have a copy, can you share it even under embargo? Help me do my job. Don't come after the fact, after my job, what I feel like the initial piece of my job is done.
Yeah, but here's the flip side of that coin. Everybody's a friggin' expert, okay? So how do you vet, how do you judge who's who and where they fit in the food chain?
I think there's two or three things I look for. They're experience. So for instance, if they're a former Fed, that is very attractive to us because now they understand both what's happening in government and out of government. And that's somebody who can relate, hey, a CIO, when I was CIO, when I was Chief Information Security Officer, when I was Chief Acquisition Officer, or whatever position they held, they can relate it back. The second thing is getting to know the person. I've seen them speak. They've written about this topic before. They have some kind of background that really tells me this person is an expert. And then I think the third is I've talked to them before, or I trust the PR person. So it's that combination of those two things. There are some PR people who I know if they call me, I trust the fact that their pitch is good, versus people who I don't know or have come through in a poor way previously. I don't trust them as much. So I look twice at their pitch. So it's goes back to, I think, what we initially talked about just briefly was the relationship. Get to know me. Have that discussion with me. And I think that goes for Francis or Tom or Jared or Emily or Scott on our staff or Nicole or any other journalist out there.
That's going to lead into a somewhat broader discussion. So let's go ahead and take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest is Jason Miller. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest is Jason Miller, the executive editor of Federal News Radio. Jason, so you mentioned a couple of times in the last segment that you got to develop a relationship with a reporter. On LinkedIn, I probably have 250 to 400 different media people that I've met over the last 20, 25 years. And I make a conscious effort to reach out to them. I don't touch them on a regular basis. I only touch them when I think it's germane. Even the freelancers, you know, people like Matt Weigelt, whom we both know. So how does one start a relationship with a media person?
You know, many times, Mark, we get that initial call. Hey, I'm new to this company XYZ or to this PR firm. I'd love to take you out for coffee. And that's tough because that's a chunk of your day. You're not sure what you're going to get out of it and both sides. So I prefer, to be honest, is make coffee almost our second date. You know, call me up and let's have a conversation. Ask me good questions. Hey, what are you looking for in a PR reporter relationship? What are the best ways I can help you? What are the best ways you can help me? What are you looking for in a story? What matters to you in a story? I think having that conversation first and foremost over the phone is worthwhile for me. It's 15 minutes. I don't mind doing it. I prefer to do it. But if I have to get into my car or you have to come to my office, that adds a whole nother level of relationship that I may walk away going, I'll never hear from that person again. Or they may go, I never want to deal with Jason again. But over the phone, we're not putting that big commitment together. Now, once you understand what Federal News Radio is, what we're about, what we care about, how we want to work, then you can start pitching us in a way that makes sense. Or then you can say, hey, I have three ideas that we think would be great for you guys. I'm going to send them to you by email. And then could we talk about it over the phone or grab coffee? Once I see your pitches, I may say, you know, these look interesting. Yeah, let's get together for coffee, or no, phone is fine. But you gotta, it's a consistent relationship that you gotta always have to build. I don't need a call every week. I don't need you to check in with me all the time, but you can't just check in whenever after I've done a story or whether you have or when you have a client who has a new product out that you're trying to get free advertising for. It's got to be a consistent relationship. And then the other piece of this I'll tell you is if you're at a conference and I'm at a conference, it's perfectly okay to be like, hey, Jason, are you going to be at Conference X? Oh, I'll be there. Oh, why don't we find each other just to say hello? That's fine by me. 5 minutes during a conference is great. Let's have lunch together at the conference. We can sit down next to each other. That's fine. But I don't want to go out of my way initially, and I don't want them to go out of their way initially for me because there may not be a match, or you take 3 hours out of your, an hour and a half out of your day to go meet somebody, and then you don't hear from them for 6 months. Mm. And you feel like, well, that was a waste of my time. Either I said something that made them mad, or they didn't realize what we did, and it was a bad fit. So it's a constant relationship, the developer, and there's got to be value on both sides. I have to bring value to them, and they have to bring value to me. The worst pitch I get is, hey, our CEO or our head of federal is going to be in town next week. Don't you want to meet with them? No. I mean, why? Why do I want to meet with them? What's the hook? Well, we thought we would tell you about what we're doing. Right, you want a free ad. Why don't you say, hey, we just won this contract award, and our CEO wants to talk about this contract award for Agency X. Or, hey, our CEO is in town. Do you mind if we just swing by your office and take 10 minutes? Now, I always say, what expectations are you setting? Because one thing I don't want is the CEO to be disappointed and go, well, that was a waste of my time. You know, most people who run companies are really busy or really important and don't have a lot of free time. And if they spend a half hour with me and go, why did I just do that? Is that my fault? Is that the PR person's fault? Is that the expectation setting point? So I think that's part of it as well. Relationship, expectations, and understanding what we do and how we work and do it as often as appropriate.
Okay. Alan Holmes sat in way back when he was editor of FCW. He did a session for me on getting PR. And this goes back, I guess, almost 20 years. But he said there were three things that got his attention as editor of FCW. And it was trends, big money, and controversy. And we don't have sex scandals here. Very rarely do we have people doing time for things, although we have a couple of instances of that just recently. But are those still the biggies for our market?
Alan always entertains me. I mean, he's a really good journalist. He's a smart person. Go through them again. Big money.
Big money, trends, and controversy.
And controversy. I would say trends for me is the most important. I think big money is a close second, and a controversy is always the third, because, and I'll work them backwards. Mm-hmm. The reason why controversy is always the third is because everyone and their brother likes to say, you should dig into this. And then I go, okay, well, do you have any documents? Oh, no, no. Oh, do you want to be a source? Oh, no, 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 no. Do you want to put me in touch with any sources? Oh, no, 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 no. But you should dig into it because something's there. So very few people actually want to follow up with controversy. Everyone kind of gets on the media for not doing enough investigative stuff. But you got to find the people who are mad enough, who have nothing left to lose, who will then come out and tell you that this is wrong. I know, Mark, you could be that person, but you also need documents too.
Well, there's that.
So controversy is a lot harder than people think.
Yes.
Big money is good, but now in this age of protests and this age of agencies are buying smaller contracts for fewer time.
Agile.
I'm not sure big money while it's still attractive, it's still not the be all end all. I'll give you a recent example. DHS awarded this $1 billion contract for cybersecurity to Raytheon. And that, I can tell you from a website perspective, that did really well on our website. There's a lot of people who are clicking on it, a lot of people reading that story because billion cyber keywords. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure an equal story if I said a $700 million contract for project management support services or a $800 million contract for logistics services would do that well on our site and people would be so interested in it. So while that's big money, the topic matters, which takes me to the first thing, trends. I think trends is probably the most important thing for us. What are you seeing, and are you seeing it from multiple customers in the federal government? We have, if a vendor tells me we have four or five agencies that are all doing X, wow, that to me is much better than just, hey, we can talk why Agile is so important. But if again, we have five agencies that are all knee-deep in Agile who are really seeing big progress, and we can talk about the progress that they're making, and we can talk specifically about agency X and Y. We can tell you more broadly about Z and A. That's a good story for me.
Okay. Well, here's one that I thought had all three elements, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it got a lot of big play. $1 billion task order off of a GWAC. Big money. The trend is larger task orders, but $947 million, I think, by far is the largest that I've heard of. And I thought that was pretty controversial, but there wasn't a lot of action around it.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it, too. A lot of these things are coming out as these multiple award contracts with a ceiling of $1 billion.
So if you're on the contract, you don't want to complain because
Correct.
You may not get the next $1 billion.
Correct. Or you may just be saying, the agency just may not be using it just because it has a huge ceiling. They may not be using it. So there's a whole lot more there to it than just the big money. I think contracts that have this big ceiling, like let's talk about Networks 2020 for a minute.
Okay.
That's the next generation telecom contract. That has a $50 billion ceiling.
Few bucks.
That's a few bucks, but it's only five or six, maybe seven vendors who are really going to bid on this. So how do you weigh that from a trend perspective and big bucks perspective? Does it matter to a lot of people? Do people really care? Most people just want their phones to work and their internet to work. They don't really care how it gets done. So then you got to just weigh that in terms of how big of a story that is, and is there a trend there? So that's why I said it's a second to the trends, but still important.
Yeah, yeah. But you know the contract awards, especially the GWACs awards, are all potentially big dollars, but the big dollars are no guarantee. So there's Correct. Nothing there. The trend there is the use of GWACs.
Right, and if an agency is saying, so I'll give you a real life example. The Homeland Security Department CDM program, Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Cyber Program. It's a big program, lots of money. Congress appropriated like $180 million for DHS to spend initially. That's a $6 billion contract. So fair amount of money. I've had some vendors tell me that they're not even bidding under phase one anymore because they've seen the handwriting on the wall and the path, for instance, that DHS and GSA and the agencies are going down. They want a set of products from other vendors, not them. So they're really getting ramped up for number two, but for phase two. But that vendor, while that would be a great story, that vendor would never come out to talk to say, we're not bidding on phase one anymore because we believe we're out of the running. Because that would hurt their relationship with DHS and GSA.
Right.
So quietly they can tell me that, but I can't report on it because it's off the record. But publicly, that's why that story is just, those stories are harder to do. Again.
Well, you can't write a story and not name names.
We can. It just doesn't. Well, yeah, but it's a credibility issue after a while.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the unnamed source for the 23rd time
exactly
that day. I want to change tracks just a little bit here. What is the value for a small company? Let me phrase this a different way. Does a small company actually need a PR firm to work with the media?
I'm going to give you the depends answer, right?
Well, it's a plus or minus kind of gig. Yeah.
Correct. I think from a small business, if they're looking to brand themselves, if they're looking to be known for something that they do, then I think a PR firm helps. If they're just trying to get positive press for their CEO or for their company, for products that they or services, and I know there's maybe the same side, the different sides of the same coin, then probably not. But if they're really trying to be a thought leader, being somebody who it has big thoughts about a specific topic and wants to be seen as, cutting edge or bleeding edge, then a PR firm helps them put all this different pieces in place, which could be white papers or it could be video white papers or it could be getting on panels at conferences or getting in front of us or other media to talk about a trend or big money. So I think that's helpful. If they just want to kind of get their name out there, they can probably do it themselves with less dollars. So I think it all depends on what your end goal is. Now, again, it could be get our name out there because we want to be branded, but how aggressive do you want to brand is the question.
Okay. The answer is it depends.
It depends, yes. Now, and also there's a cost factor.
We'll bring up the cost factor on the other side of the break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm with Jason Miller, and we will be back right after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here with Jason Miller. I've known Jason for a really long time, and I know, you know, way back when I probably used to annoy the hell out of him because he'd say something like, you know, why is Amtower in the publication so much?
I don't think I ever said that, Mark.
Well,
it was
maybe
never
not
my decision
loud.
Back then. Now that I have, we'll call it a little bit of power, I go, what the hell is Mark Amtower doing on the air so much? But no, we like your brand and your take on things. So it's good to have a different viewpoints.
There's no doubt about where I stand on any issue. You may not agree, but so let's wrap up on the cost, because you know small companies have small budgets, but they all want to get higher on the radar. What's the scoop?
I think from a cost perspective, I don't ever hear that PR firms are cheap. You know, if you think about how PR firms work, at least from my knowledge, and now some could be different, they're charging by the hour, by 15-minute increments, and maybe some have flat fees, some have you just pay a flat fee per month, a retainer fee, but many are being charged. So when you get an email from someone, that's 15 minutes. When you respond and they respond back, that's 15 minutes. So you're going to really pay by the drink, and that can get very expensive unless you have a cap. So that's why the cost factor plays in. How much value are they bringing to you for all that money you were going to be paying? And I can tell you, going back to our earlier conversation about relationships, if they're not doing some of the minimal things to create the relationship, the value that the small business potentially could get is not great. On the other hand, if you are looking to brand yourself, again, this when I say brand, I really do mean the white papers, the video white papers, the conference speaking, the smart appearances on media or
owning
with media.
The niche.
Yeah. Then I think the money is worthwhile if you get the right firm. And there are several firms that are very good at this and several firms that I would tell you privately not to touch with a 10-foot pole. We will not name names, of course.
No.
But you have firms who create the relationship, who go up to me and say, hey, I'm not sure if this fits you, but we just want to make sure you saw this. That I respond much better to than, hey, Jason, just seeing if you'd be interested in talking to XYZ person, because they're really smart. I mean, that's the way I read it, right? When you read between the lines. Or, hey, we got paid to do this, so we're going to tell you that Bill, John, you know, John Doe is really smart, and he'll talk to you about the latest in this and in all the trends that are cybersecurity or all the trends that are in contracting. So I think it depends where you want to go, what your end goal is, and how much money you want to spend. I think a lot of times small businesses, they have a lot going on, but they could hire one person to do internal marketing. It could be just as effective as a big firm or even a medium-sized firm.
Well, I mean, you know, one of the when there was a lot of layoffs in the trade publication arena, a lot of talent went on the street, and I've used them as freelancers for some of the companies that I work with. So those white papers are produced, those case studies are produced, the blog gets written, you know, new content shows up at the website, some of your social media gets taken care of for you. Those things are huge. So how does that play into getting on Jason's radar?
So I think a lot of times when you have a PR person who says, I'm a former journalist, there's no journalist that wants to hear that. It's like, oh, it's like that. You just, the big sigh of relief comes out because it's like they're trying to relate to you saying, well, I know what you're going through. So we have a connection. And the fact is we don't have a connection because you don't do what I do anymore. And I'm not trying to tell you how to do your job. So don't try to tell me the way my job works either. At the same time, I think that when you have a known person in the community who used to be a journalist and there's a relationship. So if there's a reporter at from X, and I'll use a real life example on this one that we won't hurt anyone's feelings. Professional Services Council,
mm-hmm.
Elise Castilli.
Oh, yeah.
She's the press person. She was at the Federal Times for several years. I mm-hmm. knew her fairly well when she was a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Now at PSC, I deal with her all the time. She is a joy to deal with. She is someone who I can trust, and she's someone who I know that if I call her up and need something, she'll do her best to fulfill my needs, but vice versa. If she calls me up to say, hey, Jason, we're having this event. Here are some parameters that says you, as a journalist, can come and listen, but you can't ask questions, but we're trying to make this more open. I'm going to respect her needs because she respects mine. We have a relationship. If I need to call her up and be like, hey, can you run this by Stance Holloway or Alan Shvatkin? I'm just trying to get a sense. I'm not looking for a comment. I know that the process works. So I think that's part of it. So that's a place where a journalist went that is still keeping the relationships, and they don't just throw out there. When I was a journalist, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. On the other hand, I get some pitches sometimes from people who are just Brad's another good name. Yeah, you just pointed that Brad Bass from Unisys. He's another one who does an excellent job of keeping the relationship, of making pitches that make sense, and then doing his best to meet my needs within the confines of what Unisys allows him to do in many ways.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would agree that's another good one. But there are other people who maybe haven't been a journalist for a decade or more, mm-hmm. and things have changed and relationships have changed, and you get these, just you don't get the same type of help, if you will. You don't get the same type of communication. They've become so focused on what their client needs are versus how to find a way to meet both our needs.
Right. So I'm not suggesting former journalists necessarily as PR. What I use them as are freelance writers to do the blog.
Correct.
Without the byline, et cetera.
And I think that's where a PR firm mm-hmm. can help a vendor, a small vendor particularly, get brand themselves, because they'll know who are the good writers that can produce that type of copy. Even if it's a ghostwritten type of thing, which
right.
many times it is. One of the things we've started doing at Federal News Radio is when I get these pitches that sound interesting but don't seem to have a quote-unquote news hook, they're always kind of based off of, hey, with all this talk about X, we have this smart guy who can talk about X. So what I've been doing is saying to them, hey, why don't you write us a commentary or a column? And I think many times you can tell who writes the columns based on who are former journalists and who are not.
Yeah.
They're all obviously worthwhile and they go on our website, but there's certain ones that are more concise and complete and hit it a little closer to a home run, while many people hit triples, if I'll use my baseball analogy.
Right. And some people ground out because they keep saying, me, me, me.
Well, we tell them on the front end, this is not a marketing piece. This is a thought leadership piece.
Right.
And we're not going to put anything on our website that's strictly a marketing piece unless if you pay for it.
Yeah.
If you want to pay for it.
So they ground out.
Exactly. If you want to pay for it, our ad guys would love to take your money.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll send them upstairs. The flip side of this is the social media part of the equation. And there's I've seen people claim thought leadership in their headline on LinkedIn or Facebook or Google+. Subject matter expert, I think you can claim. Thought leader is something I believe is bestowed by a community, and it's not a job for life. But do you use social media to vet people, to find stories, to throw out stuff? I know you post your stuff in various platforms.
And you and I have had this conversation about my use of LinkedIn and my posting of it. So a couple things that I've noticed over the last couple years. First of all, I'm a big Twitter user. I look at Twitter as just another avenue, another channel to get out the word in terms of the news. I use it in two ways mainly. I use it to promote Federal News Radio and my stories. Mm-hmm. So for instance, I recently did my Inside the Reporter's Notebook. That I'll do two or three different Twitter posts today and tomorrow to get people to click on it.
Right.
I do live tweeting. I'm at an event, hearing a conference, someone says something, I've tweeted it out. If it's a really hot topic, OPM hack is a good example for earlier this year. I'm taking notes and tweeting almost simultaneously. Someone says something, I take that note, I tweet it out. I think that is a good way to kind of get people to give them the kind of the play-by-play as much as possible. So those are the two kind of main ways I use Twitter. I'm also looking for news based on the people I follow, and I'm a very particular follower. I don't follow a lot of people, and if I do, it's hopeful because you're bringing value. The worst thing on Twitter is when people just talk about the food they ate or the coffee they drank, or if they don't feel well, or their bike rides, or their weekend plans, or traffic. If people use Twitter for all different reasons. I use it solely professionally. I don't use it personally. I'm a big Washington Caps hockey fan. I don't post on my site that the Caps won. Great goal by Ovechkin. I don't think you care, and I don't care that you, if you would care. So what I'm looking for in Twitter is really news, and I'm not going to follow. I tend not to follow people unless if I see that they're putting out interesting and newsworthy things. So that's Twitter. I don't do Facebook at all. And mainly it's a personal thing. I haven't found a lot of value in it for me personally. There are people who use it, but that's a whole different discussion. I find LinkedIn very similar to Twitter. I use it, as you and I have talked about before, to push our stuff out. Hey, here's a good story you should click on. Hey, here's this. I find the discussions, generally speaking, for the groups I belong to, and I belong to about 15 or so groups, you know, the FCA groups, there's a chief information officers group.
CIO group's good.
Yeah. Right. There's two GSA groups for schedule holders.
Peter Weischer's is the best.
And of course, yours, government market master. I belong to that. Mm-hmm. And then Homeland Security and Intelligence. And I just find that the discussions just are never go anywhere and are very limited in terms of people are usually saying, hey, that's a good story, or hey, that was interesting. But I don't see a lot of ongoing discussion. So as a channel to promote, I think it's worthwhile. As a place to look for people, I have not had a lot of luck. And let me give you an example. A couple years ago, so it's been a while, I noticed I was looking to get in touch with somebody, and I noticed that one of my connections was connected to them. So I emailed my connection and said, hey, could you do an e-intro for me with this person? And that person wrote back and said, oh, I really don't know them. I just clicked in and linked in with them. So I said, well, this is a total waste. This idea of if I know Mark and Mark knows Bill and Mark introduced me to Bill, and this is one example, so I get that.
Right.
But that turned me off to this idea because I think too many times people just click OK to build up their numbers of followers, yeah, or whatever we call it.
Yeah, when I teach LinkedIn, I try to explain that it's not a numbers game, it's a quality game.
I mean,
when I get those requests, I try to pass them on. They don't always work, but I give it a shot.
So, and personally, you know, I get a lot of requests for LinkedIn, and if I don't know you, if I haven't met you, I'm not going to go say yes to you. And the reason for that is because I want to know that you have a connection to me somehow. I want to know that you read my stuff, that we met at a conference, that there's a reason for us to be connected. And just because you're in PR and I'm a journalist, that means you just want something from me. I mean, that's my vision. That's my perspective. I could be 100% wrong, and that person could be the nicest person ever. But I'm telling you the way my perspective is, which is, if you don't write anything, but the standard, I want to connect with you on LinkedIn, I'm ignoring you.
Yeah, the form letter's a bit of an irritant to me as well.
And I think that, you know, I'm more responsive to people who I meet at a conference and they go, great meeting you at the AFSIA or the Affirm or whatever conference. I want to connect with you. I will hit that button more times than not. Unless the person
they're giving it the context.
Somewhere. Yes.
You know, and that's what it needs.
And I've even gotten some where people were very complimentary and said, hey, I followed you for years. You do great work. I want to connect with you. And that's a total ego boost. I can fully admit that. But I'll probably be more likely to say yes to you than if you're just the bland.
We're going to take our final break here. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest is Jason Miller. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. I'm here with Jason Miller. You can find Jason at federalnewsradio.com.
And, of course, on Twitter, at JMillerWFED. Yes.
And you can reach out to him on LinkedIn. But if you reach out to him on LinkedIn, edit the form letter to tell him why you're reaching out. How do you like to be contacted? How do people approach you?
So many times people approach me through email. I think that's the majority of the way. And I can appreciate that. Usually what happens is I get
JMiller at federalnewsradio.com.
Correct. Usually I'll get that email and I'll read it. And if it doesn't suit me or say, wow, I got to respond right away, I'll be honest, most of the time I delete it. If it's somebody I know very well, I will respond to them right away. If it's someone just kind of out of the blue and then they're pitching a really smart person based on a story I wrote yesterday, there's not a good chance I'm going to follow up with them. However, if they come back the next day or 2 days later with an email that says, hey, just following up on the email I sent you the other day, just seeing if you're interested, I will write them back. Because what I'm trying to weed out is the difference between someone reaching out to me and someone just sending a form letter out. Because we get a lot of form letters that start with, hi, Jason, and then the form letter. While I get the...
Yeah, I know.
You know, and if anyone ever calls me Mr. Miller, I absolutely know it's a form letter. I always tell people when they say Mr. Miller, that's my dad. He works down the street. I prefer email first, and I prefer it not to look like a form letter. What I don't like, though, is for them to send me an email and then call me. Hey, did you get my email? Yeah, I got it. I deleted it too, and I'm not going to answer this phone call. Or if I do, I'm gonna be very like, yeah, I got it, but I'm gonna be very honest with you. I always try to be very honest with the PR folks, and I don't ignore on the phone, but I will tell them this is what I'm looking for, this is what I want, this is what I need from you, and don't just send me blanket pitches. So I think that's the best way. I don't like people reach out to me on social media or Twitter or LinkedIn with a pitch, right? Yeah. I don't like that. I don't always look at, like, I'm on Twitter, but I'm not always looking at Twitter, and I'm always on email. So maybe I'm a little old school that way, but I think email is the best way to communicate.
No, I don't have conversations via Twitter. I use it primarily as a push. So we know how you like to be contacted, but let's talk about why people are contacting you. I always ask a couple of questions, and I'd like to get your feedback on. The first question I ask people is, why are you seeking publicity?
So many times it is very specific. It's a new product or new employee is there. And I think the second thing is a contract win. What we prefer is a great story to tell. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the most important thing. And when you tell a great story, it's got to have a federal government angle for us. It can't be about how you did great work with the state of California. There are plenty of publications who are into that. That's not what we do. And if you can bring the federal employee or federal agency to the table for that conversation, 9 times out of 10, I'll say, yes, I'll have that conversation with you. Let me give you a recent example. Lockheed Martin pitched me on their next generation identification system, NGI. And I said, well, it sounds like good news, but will the FBI talk about it? Oh, let me get back to you on that. 9 times out of 10, the answer is no, they won't talk about it.
Right.
This is the 1 time out of 10 that they said, yes, the FBI is happy to do an interview with you. I said, excellent. So I scheduled the interview with the FBI. We had a great conversation. And then I went back to Lockheed. We scheduled an interview with Lockheed. I'll merge those two into a great story. And it's a win-win for all of us.
Right.
It's a great story about a great program that's successful, that puts Lockheed Martin in a good view. And that's what they want to get out of it. When I get the, oh, well, let me see. No, they won't talk. But don't you still want to talk to us? Well, not so much, because then it becomes a free ad. I don't want to give you a free ad any more than you want to give free work to your clients.
Some of the media outlets, but especially Federal News Radio, have multiple audiences. So my next question to the companies is, who do you want to reach? Do you want to reach buyers and influencers? Do you want to reach industry? Do you want to reach government employee? Who do you need to reach?
And I think a lot of times for us, when we get pitches, it's all about reaching the government. We rarely will get a pitch from somebody who says, we service government contractors and we want to get the word out about our service. We have one relationship with a company called Gavini, who I think that's their goal, is to reach government buyers.
Right.
And they have done a very nice job of providing us with valuable insights that seem to be interested to both government and industry.
Good stats.
Data, yeah. Right. Yeah. So they're not just pitching, hey, we're really smart and we can talk about why industry needs to do X, Y, Z. So I think most of the time people want to reach government. And again, bringing the government to the table for the conversation is key, because other feds respond to other feds.
Yeah. Those two questions determine in my mind which media outlet is going to be best for them. But my final question to them would be, are your credentials properly established? If you go through this process and you have very little publicly available about who you are, what you do, et cetera, what's the point?
One of the things we talked about earlier in our conversation was former feds. If you have a former fed on your staff, they bring instant credibility to you. If you don't
having Vance Hitch there, there's some name recognition.
Correct. Van Hitch, CIO at Department of Justice for 9 years. He's been there. He's done that. He's also been in industry for 30 plus years. He gets both sides. If you're just bringing your CEO who maybe has limited federal experience or no federal experience and has only ever been a contractor, that's less exciting for us. But that doesn't mean that that person isn't worthwhile. It's just you have to work harder to establish those credentials.
Let's wrap this up by giving some final advice to whoever's listening.
Everybody's listening. Come on, Mark. So final advice from me, my perspective, you've got to create the relationship. You've got to get to know me. And I'm not talking about my kids, and I'm not talking about what sports I like. You just have to understand what I do, why I care, and what I'm trying to accomplish day in, day out, week in, week out. And you can do that in many different ways. It doesn't have to be through lunches and coffees. It's phone calls. It's getting ahead of the pitch, not being reactive, but being proactive, sharing equally. Hey, Jason, we won this award. We can't announce it yet, but we want to make sure you know if you're interested, we're happy to set something up with you. That's much better for me than the back end of it, which is, hey, here's one more in the long list of awards that are out there today. Don't you want to talk to us? The other thing is, when you do pitch, even if it's a blind pitch, meaning there's no specific news hook, don't fake the news hook. Hey, cybersecurity is really important now, and we have this new product. Don't you want to talk about our product? Because cybersecurity is really important. That doesn't do great for us. But if you say, again, getting in front of it, in the next week or two or three, this is going to happen, or Congress is going to bring this piece of legislation to the floor, our smart guy or smart woman can tell you why this is going to be good or bad, or give you this perspective. Finally, what we want for more than anything, what you want is really the thought leadership. We want someone who's smart, who our listeners are going to go, hey, that was really interesting and helpful for me, versus that was just another ad for a company. So I think, Mark, when you say understand it's not about you, is very key.
It is that way. Thank you for spending, you know, the past hour with me on this, because I think it's an incredibly important topic. It's one of the seminars that we do in the Government Market Master Series, you know, how to get PR, how to get your company word out. But there's a lot more to it than just standing on a street corner with a sandwich board and shouting. Check out the Government Market Master program. You can do it on LinkedIn at Mark Amtower, or you can do it at federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio.
You've been listening to Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.